This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm David Kalman in for Pia. Every Wednesday, we bring you a bonus podcast, one hand-picked story from the week's round of the Sunday magazine that we think's definitely worth hearing or hearing again. Of course, you can hear all our stories on the full podcast that we put out on Sundays. It's on the CBC Listen app. All right, here is this week's highlight. Waking up on the morning of June 30th, 2021, residents of Lytton, BC had no idea that their entire village was about to go up in flames. Two people were killed, 90% of Lytton destroyed after a wildfire swept through that evening. It sparked global headlines and soon became a focal point for the fight against climate change, just as Fort McMurray did in 2016. Well, 3 years after Lytton's fire, most of the town has still not been rebuilt, and people with connections to the village worry it will never be the place it was before. Kevin Loring is a playwright and actor and member of the Lytton First Nation. Peter Edwards, a crime reporter with the Toronto Star. They both grew up in Lytton and have teamed up to write a new book called Lytton, Climate Change, Colonialism, and Life Before the Fire. Kevin and Peter, hello.
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 Great to have you on the Sunday magazine. And Kevin, let me start with you. I go back to that day that Lytton burned. What came into your mind most immediately?
Horror. I was sitting in my backyard in Metcalfe, Ontario, just out of Ottawa here, and I was literally talking with my wife about going back home. We do a community project every summer where we take creation stories from my people, the Intlakatmuk, and we turn them into plays with an ensemble of 40 community members. And so we were planning what that trip was going to look like that year when I noticed on social media, my feed started blowing up with images and messages that the town was on fire. And I ran into my home office and I turned on my computer and I literally watched in real time as somebody live streamed the town burning down. Right. And so I was immediately struck with shock and horror.
Peter, anniversaries of any kind of traumatic event resurrect those memories. How are you feeling on this one?
It's still a bit of a numbing thing. I mean, I got an email in the middle of the night from a person from Lytton who's trying to come to grips with it, and someone I haven't met, but just someone who knows I'm working on this. And it brings back a lot of connections, a lot of memories, and it, you know, that you can't go home again thing. It really does have a ring of truth.
And Peter, we will and should talk about Lytton in the future, but let me talk about Lytton in the past. I've never been there. What was it like?
For me, it was magical. For me, it was all sorts of history, acceptance, not being afraid of people. I mean, at its peak when I was there, there were 550 people and then surrounding communities. And I was never afraid of anybody. I could knock on a door and go in a house. If I was riding my bike, my mother would say, stop by and say hi to so-and-so, and I would. I mean, I learned later Indigenous people considered it the center of the universe, and for me, that was my universe.
Tell me about this incident with the school bus when you were 10 years old.
Yeah, that was an odd one. They parked the school bus outside my house, and I thought I'd kind of explored. I climbed in, I started playing around with it, and next thing you know, I released the brake and I was heading down a hill. So I kind of did one of those rolls like you see in a cowboy show, you know, to get out of the bus as it was kind of going fast down this hill. And then I watched it go through a fence and crash into some trees. So I went sort of slinking home, and I was very well behaved, trying not to attract suspicion.
How many years before people realized it was you?
Right now with the book.
Okay. Yeah. Coming clean after all these years.
Oh, it's a publicity stunt. If I get arrested, I'll sell more books.
That's right. Kevin, the people of Lytton, I mean, we're hearing from Peter about just the ease of living. And many people in small towns right across this country have those kinds of wonderful experiences. Tell me about the people of Lytton.
They're super resilient. they'll give you the shirt off their back, you know, very generous, you know, big open hearts. You know, I think of folks like Peggy Choot, who ran the Visitor Center, and who was involved in basically so much, any event in that was going on in Lytton, she was volunteering or she was behind it in some level or another. I mean, the Caboose Park that was across the street, she you know, helped make that happen. She kept the pool going all for many, many years. People are just salt of the earth.
Your family has such deep connections there, part of the community since, I mean, certainly going back to the 1800s at least. But it's a tiny area. Why so significant?
Well, I mean, if you look at it geographically and over time, if you think of Lytton is actually the village site there, Clicquemchean, is the longest continuously settled village site in North America, some folks believe. And so, you know, when you dig down into the, each yard is an archaeological site. And so, you know, you dig down any number of meters and you'll find artifacts. And the reason is that the two rivers, the Thompson and the Fraser, meet there. It's the confluence of those great rivers. And so there's an abundance of salmon every year, and there's a lot of game in the mountains. And so there's a lot of resources there for folks to come to. But it's beautiful, it's striking, it's spiritually significant for the Ntlikatmak, for us. And for the Buddhist monks as well, who have a monastery there, for many people, they find it, it's one of those places that's kind of magical.
You're speaking about it from, in part, an indigenous perspective, and you're speaking about the artifacts there. And often when we tell the tale of, I mean, you can pick your place in Canada over history, the relationship between the indigenous people and the settlers who came to their lands has been one of, I mean, at times violence and antagonism. How has the relationship evolved in and around Lytton?
There's a lot of integration. Like, I come from a mixed family. My father's mostly white. I think there's a bit of Cree in there in the background, but he's mostly was a white guy. And my mom, of course, is Ntlikatmak. And so, you know, I'm the product of a mixed race family. And so you see a lot of that in the community. Mm. And so there's a lot of integration.
Peter, you've said all the white kids in Lytton used to pretend to be indigenous, not in a disparaging way, but for fun. Can you expand on that?
The big kids, like there's a guy, Robert Boland, he was like my sports hero, and he really was an amazing athlete, even though I doubt he's got any medals. He swam against a guy named Brian Budd, and Brian Budd won the World Superstars competition when that was a big deal on TV. And Robert, wearing cutoff shorts, almost beat him in the pool, and Brian was just a superb athlete, really, really trained. He taught us all about wheat germ and that sort of thing, and there's Robert jumps in the pool and he can match him. And it was just the people you'd see, the sort of the coolest kids or the ones who had the good stories. A lot of the times they were indigenous and it wasn't really a big thing. It was, it just seemed like that's the way the world was. I remember my dad, he was a doctor. He loved it when he got paid in salmon. Like we'd get these huge salmon instead of money. And, you know, to this day, if I eat salmon, it brings back all sorts of nice memories.
Lytton is also and has always been one of Canada's hot spots when it comes to temperature. And, you know, anywhere in the world we go these days, there are often people saying, I don't remember it being this hot or hot this often or hot this long. And Lytton, I suppose, could well be one of those places. Kevin, when did you start noticing that the fires have long been a part of life in that part of the world, and the heat had just started to get worse?
Yeah, I mean, you know, growing up in Lytton, you become acclimatized and accustomed to warm summers, of course. It's a nice dry warmth, so it's not too bad. It's not like muggy like here in Ottawa. But over the years, especially in the last 10, 12 years, you just like the fires, the forest fires in British Columbia in general, are just, you know, we talk about it's the smoke season or it's the fire season. It's, you know, every place is inundated with smoke and fire these days. And so many communities are being threatened and actually destroyed now by fire. But I mean, I think the first real indication for me was when I was around 19. And there was always this big white patch at the top of a mountain, you know, across the river, this little glacier that never melted. And then one year it was just gone when I was about 19. And I was like, oh, And I just sort of noticed it. And it was just sort of like, oh, that's that for my whole life, that that white patch on the mountain had always been there. And then when one day it was gone, and it was kind of a the first sort of indication in my life where I noticed something was different.
And if I bring it up to the immediate lead up to the fire 3 years ago, the one that burned down the village, there was this record-breaking heat wave that was underway. Peter, what were you hearing from people back home about that heat wave?
It was really jarring because it's we thought of it as Canada's hot spot, but then you're hearing hottest spot in the world. It actually, I got that for a brief time.
At, 49.6 degrees Celsius on that day, the hottest ever recorded in Canadian history.
Yeah, and I can't really even imagine that. I mean, I remember as a kid, we'd just be in the swimming pool all day. Like, you'd just go there and, you know, come back home at 8 hours later to eat. And without that swimming pool, I don't know what my childhood would have been like. It was just a huge thing. And the heat, like now that it's hotter, it's hard to imagine, really.
Mm-hmm. And I would even say, like, anecdotally, I had folks sending me, you know, pictures of their thermometers, and it was well above 50 in certain areas. I mean, they take a mean average, I think, of the area, but I'm certain that there were other locales in the community that were above 50.
You're listening to the Sunday Magazine on CBC Radio 1. I'm David Common, in for Pia Chattopadhyay, and this morning we're speaking with playwright Kevin Loring and journalist Peter Edwards about their new book. This is 3 years to the day after a wildfire burned down their hometown of Lytton, British Columbia. Kevin, in the book, I'm gonna bring us to June 30th, 2021, and you write about how it felt to watch the town burn. Now, I'm going to quote from you here. "And then the thick black smoke obscured everything, and I knew that if anyone was in town, they wouldn't be able to survive that. I felt like I was burning, like I was on fire, and there was nothing I could do." How does it feel to think back on that, knowing your loved ones survived, but the town did not?
Yeah, I mean, that moment was horrific. I don't know how else to say it. It was just horror. I didn't know, you know, I was, when the smoke blew through, I was literally watching, you know, my brother's truck in the back of my mom's yard explode. I was watching, you know, houses burn, you know, house to house, just jumping and leaping through within a matter of minutes. And so I was kind of in shock. And when I think back, I'm still sort of triggered by it. I'm still like, I go right to those emotions again when I think about it. And it was one of the struggles that I had even writing this is, you know, I would think back to beautiful moments or moments that really were emblematic in my life, and I would be triggered again because I knew that I would never be able to go back to that place. I would never be able to experience home again in that way. And it's been a really difficult thing to wrestle with.
I think of the Fort McMurray fire, which preceded Lytton. And of course, it wasn't the city that was destroyed, but certainly entire neighborhoods were wiped away by fire. And some people who lived in those neighborhoods just weren't able to go back. Some did, wanted to, and others just, it was too big a mountain for them to climb to do that. If I look at Lytton, a place where the town was just gone over the course of a couple of hours, what is that like?
Both of my parents were cremated. I don't have anything to do with their ashes. I want to remember them the way I love them, not as a byproduct of something terrible. And so my last memories of Lytton are fantastic, and I'll dine out on those.
Yeah, for me, I think, like, my mom is looking to rebuild this fall. You know, like, Lytton burned down, the community burned down, but the community is still there. You know, and so there are still people who live like around the reserves and the houses that didn't burn down. And so the rebuild is taking a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Only 5 building permits so far.
Yeah, it's going at an absolute glacial pace. A lot of that is the red tape. A lot of that is the archaeology that has to be done. Like I said earlier, every yard is an potential archaeological site. Which is the homeowners are on the hook for if they find anything, which is a real pain for a lot of folks and really painful. So it's it's painful. I mean, the whole process is painful. The loss of the community is painful. The impact on the folks there has been devastating. I still have, of course, so much family and so many ties to the community. And so I get, you know, I hear these updates from people who are working on the front lines about the levels of despair from the survivors in the community, with the sort of the center of their world being erased, and there's no infrastructure there. And so it's really hard.
How do you feel when people use past tense when they say, oh, that's where Lytton was?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand it. I always make a point to say that it's still there. People are still there. You know, it's going to rebuild. It's just taking forever.
Yeah, there's one retired nurse who said that she doesn't want it to be a symbol. It's a place, like Evan said. It's real. There's life there. And when something gets reduced to being a symbol, it's like a thing, inanimate, and it's more than that.
I was asking you about the past tense. The Prime Minister spoke at a climate change conference not long after the fire, and Justin Trudeau used the past tense. How did that resonate with the people you know and with you?
Well, I think it pissed a lot of people off, but I understand he was trying to make a point, but it
about
sort
the cost of climate change.
Yes, the cost of climate change, but it sort of negated the survivors who were still there trying to pick up the pieces. It's still there. It's just, and the community spirit is still really, really strong. There's a lot of really fierce advocates for the community, and so it was infuriating at the time. But I understand he was trying to make a point.
Mm-hmm. If that point was to say, look, climate change is causing more of these devastating events, and they will be happening more often. If that was the point, you know, as you write this book that is Lytton, Climate Change, Colonialism and Life Before the Fire, but climate change, the first part of that. Do you think that resonates, that connection between what humans have done to the planet and the cost that humans are experiencing because of what we've done?
You can hope. You can hope that something, I mean, I really think Lytton will be rebuilt, but it would be good if it extends to other places. I mean, as much as this was the center of my universe when I was a little kid, wherever people are growing up, all these other communities, the 400 places that had fires in BC at the same time, that's the center of other people's universes, and they shouldn't lose them either.
I think that we're seeing every year the impacts of the climate catastrophes. I mean, the thing often we skip over when we talk about the Lytton fire was the floods that happened that fall as well from the atmospheric river that hit the area, which washed out any remaining infrastructure like roads, bridges, whole communities were isolated. A reserve was washed into the river from a fall time atmospheric river that hit the area after the fires devastated the forest. So there was nothing holding any of the soil together.
What is the lesson of Lytton's fire?
Hey, I think cherish your universe, cherish what you've got around you. The community thing. I mean, it's a very, very non-judgmental place. That's one thing that that was just magical for me as a kid. I could be terrible at something and nobody would tell me. They'd let me figure it out. And so you could experiment. I think it's interesting that both of us ended up as writers from a place that at the end had 249 people. But people just didn't stop me when I wanted to do something. And just a certain respect. One thing in Lytton, there really was a feeling of inclusion for me. Like I never was told I couldn't do something. And then I remember in Ontario, one of my first big experiences was singing in a grade school choir and being told, stop singing, just mouth the words, you're not good enough. And it didn't break my heart. I thought it was kind of funny because the song was Sound of Silence. But that just never happened in Lytton. In Lytton, you were never told, be quiet, you're not good enough.
The Sound of Silence, maybe that's what was being encouraged.
Yeah, you're demanded, actually.
Listen, just to wrap up our conversation, Lytton is, however slowly, rising from the ashes once again. And as it is rebuilt, what kind of place would you like it to be? Peter, I'll start with you.
things like inclusion, things like respecting each other, like being able to knock on a neighbor's door and go inside because you're cold or because you need a drink of water or something, like just sort of a liking your neighbors. I where I live now, I don't know the names of any of my neighbors, and nobody wants to know them. Mm-hmm. It was magical to have that sense of extended family. Litton did achieve that.
Kevin?
Yeah, I hope it's built back with resiliency in mind. I don't think that the climate events that we've been experiencing over the last 10, 20 years are going to go away. If anything, they're going to increase. And so I think that we need to be mindful of that whenever we're building anything these days. But I hope that it also is built in the spirit of, recapturing the sweetness of that little place, the quaintness, the friendliness, the spirit of it.
Kevin, Peter, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Gukstrom.
Kevin Loring is a playwright, actor, and a member of the Lytton First Nation. Peter Edwards, a crime reporter with the Toronto Star. Their new book is called Lytton, Climate Change, Colonialism, and Life Before the Fire. You can find all the stories we bring you each week on the Sunday Magazine over on our website, cbc.ca/Sunday. I'm David Common. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.